Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. My name is Eric.
And my name is Mac.
And if you're new to the podcast, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. Pleasure to have you on board. What we do here is we talk about music. Keep it short and sweet. That's what we do. Mac and I have been friends for a very, very long time, since we were kids, and we've always had a shared love of music, and that's what kind of inspired this podcast.
Yeah, and as you know, we like to say, if music is life, then life is a mixtape. We talk about all kinds of music, we love all kinds of music, and hey, it's what we love to do.
Absolutely.
And if you're a fan of the show, or listening for the first time, or you're a loyal listener, hey, rate us, review us, follow, subscribe, just anything you can do to help us out with those algorithms, we appreciate it.
It really does make a huge difference, too. If you like what you hear, you know, give us a rating, would really appreciate it, would really help us out.
Absolutely.
So today we are going to talk about a topic that is very near and dear to both Max and my own heart. The topic is vinyl records.
Yes.
When we were kids, many hours were spent in my bedroom listening to old AC/DC records and Kiss records and Van Halen records, and just fond memories. And the resurgence of vinyl in the last, what would you say, 10 years or so, it really kind of came back around.
Yeah, I'd say 10.
It's been a lot of fun, not only buying or rebuying or blowing the dust off of some of those old records that we grew up listening to, but also tracking down stuff we haven't heard for years, you know, and listening to it, holding it, reading the liner notes, looking at the pictures. It's just such a cool way to experience music versus just popping on streaming services, which is all fine and good, but there's just something cool about having, you know, that vinyl in your hands. When you think,
it's almost like you're reading a book, you know, when you get the record, and like you said, there's a liner notes, there's everything, and you just get this fuller picture of, you know, the music and how it was created.
Yeah, and the lyric sheets, you know, it's just such a cool experience. And it really kind of, it encourages you, because you physically have to get up and walk over to the record player to skip a song or anything, flip it over to side two. So it really encourages you to experience an album in its entirety, which is kind of a lost art in itself. You know, back in the days when we were growing up, artists made records and they were very thought out. They were very methodical. The order of the tracks, how they flowed together, whether it told a story, was it a concept record? Mm-hmm. And, you know, now we live in a day and age where it's a song. Some artists don't even put out albums anymore. They strictly drop singles. Right. So again, the vinyl thing, it's an old new way of experiencing music.
Yeah. We're just ecstatic that it's coming back.
Yeah.
And you know, not only people from our generation are digging it, but younger people are getting into it. Newer artists are putting out songs and albums on vinyl, which is just great to see.
Yeah, we were just talking before we hit record about Taylor Swift. Her new record is coming out and it's going to sell over 1 million copies of vinyl. Think about that. This is an artist who's, the majority of her fan base wasn't even alive when vinyl was a thing. And now she's putting out a record that's going to sell with pre-sale numbers. They already know it's going to sell over 1 million hard physical copies of vinyl. That's insane.
I don't care if you're a Taylor Swift fan or not. Like, for music and artists, that is huge. What she's doing for the industry by putting out vinyl.
Absolutely.
But hey, today, for the very first time, we're going to have a guest. We're going to bring in a friend of ours. His name is Paul. We've known him for over 30 years. Great friend of ours. Huge music fan. So many musical memories with Paul. Paul and I met in 1992 at a Saigon Kick concert.
That's so great, dude. I love that story.
If memory serves, you know, it was during Love Is On The Way and our eyes met and... you know, the rest is history. Actually, at that show, Matt Kramer, the singer, lead singer of Saigon Kick, jumped into the crowd feet first and kicked me square in the jaw.
So that's what happened.
That's what happened. And I wasn't mad at him then for it, and I'm not mad at him now. That was a great time. But anyways, Paul, we're bringing him on because he's the owner of Vintage Marché in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's Tampa Bay's largest monthly vintage market, and they see a lot of classic vintage vinyl being bought and sold. So we wanted to bring Paul in to kind of break that down for us, what he's seeing, what the trends are. So let's bring him in. Paul, come on in.
Hey guys, how you doing?
All right. Good, man. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm fantastic. And you know, yeah, when Mac brought up the whole Saigon Kick, Love Is On The Way, he left out the part when I see it on my Sirius, you know, when I'm driving and it comes on, I always do a little screenshot and send it to him. I'll be like, thinking of you, you know.
That's when the love affair began.
Oh, and that's where it all started over 30 years ago, which is crazy.
He's not bullshitting, Eric. He texts every time he hears that song. He texts me a screenshot of it.
That's not made up.
That's fantastic. I hope you at least pull over before you do that.
You know what? He said I'm down in Florida.
Yeah, it's like the Wild West down there. Yeah, I've driven in Florida. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Everybody's sending their friends screenshots while they're on the highway.
Yeah, and they're taking pictures of their screen. Yeah, send it. Everybody. That's what we do.
Paul, so tell us a little bit about Vintage Marché and what you have going on down there.
Well, we have 15,000 square feet of anything vintage. It has to be at least 25 years or older. And it's everything from salt and pepper shakers to sofas to, decor, everything. Of course, vinyl has become just such a huge thing. It's amazing how fanatical the young and old, young kids are getting really into it too. But we've added that. We have vintage clothing. It's just anything old, cool, retro, like one of a kind type stuff is what we really love to try to find. And bring it to our customer base, which really show us a lot of love and support down here.
Yeah, and like as it relates to the vendors that are in the market and those selling vinyl, what are you seeing? Like, what's popular? Is it a certain style of music, or a certain era, or is it, what are you seeing?
Well, our vinyl area is always just packed, and you will see young and old. I see a lot of young kids, and I would say 16, to 20 years old, digging through the vinyl, and they're looking at stuff that bands that that you would never even know that they would know existed. And I did talk to a girl, and this wasn't because of us, this upcoming interview with you guys. I just asked her, I said, what do you like, what are you into? She really was into it for the artwork. They love the graphics, that's cool. and then they're like, the music is like almost like a secondary thing, because they like to explore the music too, and they're learning something new. Because a lot of times some of this vinyl is so obscure. So it's just a whole new experience for them to what Mac was hitting on before and you guys were talking about. It's just this exploratory thing where you go in and you just explore a physical thing that you can hold. It's not this digital thing on your phone. It's something tangible that you can have. And you can put it on your wall, and look at it. All kinds of amazing graphics and the amount of effort that they put in back then.
It's cool that you bring that up, because I didn't think about that before we hit record on this tonight. But yeah, that's really an interesting thought, because we would do that when we were kids. We'd go to the record stores, and I used to buy records from bands that I'd never even heard. If they looked cool or the album had cool artwork, I would come home with records all the time. Some of the bands are still in my heavy rotation. So that's cool that still exists. That's still a thing for younger, consumers.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, a lot of the trippy kind of 60s kind of graphics, like they're into that,
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're not a bunch of grumpy old men here. I hate technology. And we've moved and evolved with the technology. Again, we started out with vinyl and cassette tapes and then CDs. And now here we are in the digital age. And hey, we're all in. I get it. Like it's digital music sounds great. It's easy to use.
The ease of use is absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. But there's something about holding that vinyl.
Yeah.
Like what you were saying, these 18, 20-year-old kids, vinyl was dead from like 95 to like 2000 and, oh, hell, maybe 10. Records, you'd see them at the curb. Nobody wanted them. Luckily, I held on to them, mainly for the graphics. It was like at one point, because I didn't even have a turntable, couldn't listen to them. But I'm like, I'm not giving these things away. There's no way in hell.
Right. I think I went a good 10, 20 years with a whole stack of records, but no turntable.
Oh, same. Yeah. Same. They sat in a box in my closet, but I was not getting rid of them. It was part of my youth, I had no idea. I'm not claiming I had I'm not Nostradamus. I didn't know that they were going to come back. I just didn't feel right getting rid of them. They were still cool to me. And luckily, like you said, what's old is new again or whatever. And they're back. So I'm so glad I hung on to those. And what's even funnier is I have records that as the medium was dying, I would go and buy bargain basement stuff. I have records in my collection that have like 99 cent stickers on them that are on eBay now for like 80 bucks for this record. I bought it for a dollar.
Yeah. It's amazing what's happening right now with the whole thing. And I'll probably shock you with some prices. Part of my job is like looking stuff up and seeing what things are worth, because we come across crates of vinyl, and it's like, is this, if it's a first pressing, they're like stamps or coins. It comes down to condition. It comes down to a lot of different things that factor into the value. And I'll be honest with you, I just looked up an album a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, the darn thing was worth $200, and I was about to put $10 on it just to let it rip, you know, because no, it's amazing. So,
and I'm guessing just based on the market, you know, you're 1 weekend a month, you know, building anticipation and excitement. People come in. I'm guessing there's a lot of turnover with the vinyl. Like, there's not, you know, week to week, you're not seeing the same vinyl, you know, for sale.
No, it's a well-curated collection. And I always say on my little live in my videos, I say, we're not the biggest record store by any means in town. I mean, there's a lot of vinyl places. However, this is a well-curated, maybe, I don't even know how many, right? We'll say 5,000 albums that we have, but it's well-curated. It's gone through every single month. You know, and I love all music, but, you know, a lot of the vinyl that you find now, if you go to a garage sale, it's like big band, you know, something yeah. that just to find that holy grail, you know, Michael Jackson Thriller album, you know, first pressing yeah. or something like that. Or if, you know, in our, what we like, you know, you find like a first pressing of, like, we'll say Metallica's Kill right. 'Em All.
Yeah.
You know, like the first pressing, and it's on Megaforce Records. So you'd want to find out when and who pressed the first of that particular album. That record, you know, you're talking $250 to $400 bucks. And if you were disciplined and didn't open it, you might be closer to $600. You know, I mean, the prices just start getting nuts.
And I think that leads us to where we're going next in this conversation, I think, is the appeal of vinyl to us personally.
Yeah.
You know, because like Eric was saying, like, we don't buy these to keep them wrapped up in plastic and not enjoy them.
Exactly. Yeah.
You exactly.
know, like me, like, okay, yeah, sure. You can. I'm not going to sit here and argue. Like, I'm not an audiophile. I'm not going to argue about which medium sounds better, which is better audio. But for me, like vinyl, it's, you know, I like the imperfections in the sound. Right. It's there's yeah, just some yeah. sort of nostalgia for me, like the artwork, the liner notes. I don't know. For me, that's the draw. It just makes the music more interesting. But what about you guys?
Well, for me, you know, I like the physical interaction with it, too. You know, you got to cue the needle over. You got the little arm, you drop it down. You got to look at the album to figure, you know, if you haven't memorized the tracks, you got to go to track three. You see the little lines in the vinyl. It's like, okay, I got to slide the little arm over, drop it down onto that track. It's like an interactive thing. And it's so crude. And we're so used to just hitting next on our phone, where this is a physical thing. Like, you got to go over and physically do it. When the record's over, you know, you only get half the album on, and you got to go over and flip the record over. It's a great way to spend a day when you're like around the house and you just, because it's not very compact. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't pack it up, can't take it for a walk with you up the street, but you can most certainly entertain, or, you know, if you're cleaning the house or just hanging out, you know, it's great to just have that interaction and go through all your records and look at them while you're yeah. listening to them,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, I'd say for me, it's a little bit of both. I mean, I definitely love, like you guys were saying, just, you know, having that physical copy in your hand and looking at the art and reading the liner notes and the physical interaction, like Paul was saying, of putting the needle on the record. There's just something cool about that. And again, probably because that was my first exposure to music. So it just brings back a lot of good memories for me. But also, I will say, I get a little bit nerdy. I'm not super techie. So I'm not going to sit here and explain to you how or why, but certain records were made to be pressed on vinyl. I mean, you know, you buy something from the 70s, a Fleetwood Mac record or something like that. I mean, that's what that was the medium at the time, was vinyl records. So those yeah. albums were made to be pressed on vinyl. So when you listen to them streamed versus, you know, listening to the vinyl copy or even a CD, it just sounds better, man. It's warmer. It was meant to be played that way. I'm a huge Nine Inch Nails fan. Trent Reznor makes albums and masters them in a way so that they sound best on vinyl. And when you slap headphones, now you really want to go down the rabbit hole, put your headphones on. Don't just blast it while you're like cleaning the house. But listen to a Nine Inch Nails record with really good headphones on, and it'll blow your freaking mind, man. You just hear things that you didn't hear before, and things just sound a certain way. And like I said, there's this warmth to it. Pink Floyd is another one. You know, listen to Dark Side mm-hmm. of the Moon on vinyl, and then listen to an old CD copy or stream it, and it's just not the same. So again, right. without getting too crazy, I do really appreciate the sound quality of it as well. But I'm not going to say that's why I listen to vinyl. I listen to vinyl because it's fun for me, you know, and I yeah. like that physical copy of the record.
And on another note too, which you kind of touched on, which sparked my memory, and you guys did this, I know you did. You would take your record and spin it backwards, always looking for
a oh, yeah, yeah.
which is super good for your needle, by the way. You should
it
always
really
do-
is. Oh yeah, yeah. Probably good for the record too, maybe. Oh, I'm yeah. not sure. Yeah. You know. But they wanted you to try to find that stuff because you say, why did they, what was that word they just said? And you're like, but then you're like, oh, wait a minute. And then you go backwards and it's like, then you figure out what it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, and of course, you know, we were around during the satanic panic in the 80s. And so all these records that supposedly had these backwards messages on them and everything. So yeah, I've ruined more than probably a couple needles trying to find out what exactly Judas Priest was saying. And turns out it was nothing.
Another interesting thing is if you look on the inside of the record, they would in the when they would make the master, they would put little sayings on the inside. So if you look, if you go out and find new records and stuff, they will have it'll say something on the inside. It'll be written in script around, you know, and they would have all kinds of funny sayings and different things. That was always a neat thing too. When you get a new record, I would always check on that to see if they said anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember some of the old Kiss records would have stuff like that on them. And that's cool.
I got in a world of trouble when I was a kid. You know, it was right like when, like the early days of hip hop. I think I saw like a Run DMC video where Jam Master Jay was scratching. And like, I did that at home.
Of course he did.
Yeah. It was like a real record that was playing. And I remember my dad coming in screaming at me, like, what are you doing? You know, oh my God, I got in so much trouble.
That was the end of your rap career, right?
Yeah, I was done being a DJ at that point. There was no more scratching.
Look, Grandmaster Flash, knock it off.
Dad was pissed.
Yeah, I luckily never got caught. I'm not going to say I never did that, but yeah, I never got caught doing that. My mom would have kicked my ass.
That was
too.
The one and only time I ever did it.
Of course, Dad walked in. Oh, that's great, man.
All right, guys. Each one of us, we're going to share one album that had a huge impact on us when we were younger. Just talk about what it was about the album, whether it was the music, the artwork, what you name it. But let's all just, we're going to go into this. We're all going to share
all
one.
Right.
So who wants to go first here? Who's jumping in?
Well, we should have our guest go first.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Not to put you on the spot
guest
or anything,
first,
Paul. But
please.
Where is your manners, Mac? You know?
Clearly, they're gone.
Well, you know, I had two stories, and I went with this one because it's literally my first full-length album that I ever got, okay? So I will try to make the story short, but it does have its funny moments. So anyways, it's 1981. I'm at Kmart with my mom, and I think I scraped up enough money to get a record. And I was there. I remember this moment. This is a long time ago, you know? So I'm there, and I'm looking at the records, and I'm like, okay, I'm entertaining Journey Escape. Okay.
Okay. Great record.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And then I see this off in a distance. You know, actually, it's probably right next to it. But anyways, I see this gold album with a cannon on the front of it.
Oh,
and I
nice.
See AC/DC. Ooh. And I'm like, what is that? You know, so I'm like cannon or this little egg-shaped thing shooting through outer space. I'm like, I'm going with the cannon. So I got For Those About to Rock. And, you know, I brought it home and I'll be honest with you, I haven't opened that album or looked at it or played it in a long time. I mean, I'm talking 30 years maybe. But I can remember opening it up, Brian Johnson wearing the Harley Davidson shirt with his hands up. And I'm just like, I'll never forget that. I opened it up and I was like, oh my God, this is just mind blowing. And then you put that thing on and it was mind blowing. And then here's the funny little extra thing. So I became a huge AC/DC fan. And my mom was like, they were going on vacation. They'd always get me a little souvenir or something. So my mom was like, well, what do you want us to get you? I'm like, I want another AC/DC album. And she's like, well, we'll try to find you one. Which one do you want? I'm like, well, it's called If You Want Blood, You Got It. Okay. So my mom comes back, right? They come back from their vacation. And she, and I'm like, oh, I got it. I got a record. I got it. So I'm all excited, right? I open it up. It's Hall & Oates, Private Eyes. And I was just like not happy. I was like, what is this Private Eyes thing? And she goes, I saw the front of that album cover. She goes, I'm not getting you that. Which made me want it more.
Oh yeah.
Angus has the guitar through his chest, right?
Yeah. It's like And then I think on the back, isn't he like laying in a pool of blood or something?
I believe so, yes.
So, you know, and at the time it's 19, so I was like 10, 11. And so my babysitter came over. I'm like, I don't even want this. And I gave it to her, you know, and she's like, because she liked Hall & Oates. So that's the long story short. That record's worth about $120 now, unopened, because I never would have opened it if I would have just kept it. But that's So that's my story of my first record.
That's awesome. Yeah, that album has actually come up a couple times on this podcast because that is one of the albums that I sort of inherited from one of my older brothers that Mac and I would listen to, you know, in my room, like I was talking about earlier. That album is amazing. Oh, yeah. I love that record to this day. Still have it. Mm-hmm. Still have it.
All right. You guys ready? I'm going to show you the one I almost chose.
Oh, you brought visual aids? Oh, man.
Yes. Quiet Riot, Metal
Health. That's a great record, man. Nice.
My first metal album. Good way to start. We'll call it. Yeah. So this is the one I almost went with because just, you know, the first two tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Metal Health, Come On, Feel the Noise.
Classic.
Okay. But the one I chose to discuss today, first album I bought with my own money.
Another good one.
Yep.
1984 by Van Halen.
Another stellar record, man.
And this was when I really became a Van Halen fan. I was kind of too young for everything before that.
Sure.
I had a little bit of exposure to Diver Down, you know, with Pretty Woman. But 1984, like, when it just blew up when it came out. Like, you know, the video for Jump, you know, like the single got released before the album. So, like, the excitement for 1984 was just,
oh, yeah.
It was incredible, right? Everybody had to have 1984. You know, the great cover artwork, you know, with the angelic little baby smoking cigarettes. You know, which, and again, Paul, same thing. I'm in the store, you know, and I got my own money and I'm going to buy this. And, you know, my dad's looking at me like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you think you're going to buy... Why is there a baby smoking cigarettes? I'm like, just trust me. Yeah, trust me. But I mean, you know, the back cover has these just incredible photos of the band.
Yeah.
And just it's loaded with hits. Just Jump, Panama, Top Jimmy, Drop Dead Legs, Hot for Teacher, I'll Wait. Like if the album is just
stacked,
loaded. But more than the music, this was the first album that I studied the liner notes. I not only learned every word to every song, but I started realizing that music was more than just four dudes playing instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Like I learned, you know, it was produced by Ted Templeman. And then I would see his name pop up elsewhere. 1984 was recorded at 5150, which became, you know, the title of the next album. You know, then I learned about the existence of all these different personnel I'd never heard of before in my life. You know, guitar, drum, bass techs, bookkeepers. They had their personal secretaries, their tour manager, fan club manager, stage manager. They had all these people, you know, their names listed out on the liner notes. And that's kind of, it was like an education for me. Like, oh, this is a business. This is an industry. Like, that takes a ton of people to make this band happen. So that's why I chose 1984, because I just would sit in my room and play that album endlessly and just study those liner notes and just learn about the music industry and all the people involved in making it happen.
And let's not move on until we talk about at least a couple of those videos as well. Oh my God, dude. I mean, that was when MTV played music videos. And Van Halen was in heavy, heavy, heavy rotation, and they made some of the best videos, man. I mean, all of those videos are so good. Panama, and they're cruising around LA in the old drop top. I think it was a Caddy. Jump is a fantastic video. Of course, Hot for Teacher as a teenage boy, that video made you feel away, you know? But yeah, God, they were just so good.
But you're right. That album encapsulated like a period of time that, like you said, like videos were blowing up and Van Halen figured it out. They had this great formula. They always made great videos. The music was great. And they introduced, you know, the synthesizers right at that time, which was new to them, new to kind of everybody. With, you know, just Eddie's artistry when it came to switching from guitar to and synthesizer and everything. So it was a great album musically, but like I said, everything else about it, I just jumped into it and learned so much just reading the liner notes.
That's cool, man. And Van Halen too, let's not forget, they also kind of brought hard rock / heavy metal to the masses, because until Van Halen came along, hard rock and heavy metal was dude music. You know what I mean? And it was like ugly dudes pumping their fists in the air, and we all loved it. We ate it up. But Van Halen was like cute. They smiled when they played their instruments. They had great hair. So all of a sudden, you start going to hard rock and metal shows, and there was a whole lot more females in the audience. And that's all Van Halen, man. And then, of course, the 80s LA glam scene that followed, that was them that kicked that door open, man. So
for sure.
And didn't lose an ounce of credibility either. They were such a good band and wrote such good songs and were such amazing musicians that people didn't hate them for it. you know?
Right. And then again, Jump is really a song about nothing. I mean, we think about it lyrically, there's nothing going on there, but it's just fun. It just works. No one cares. Yeah. Like, it's just the musicianship and everything is perfect about it. Who cares that the lyrics don't make any sense? Who cares?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
100%. That's cool, man.
All right, Eric, what do you got?
Yeah, so mine, I had, much like you, I had two in mind, and I'll kind of roll them into one because it's the same story. When I was 7 years old, I have a cousin she's roughly 10 years older than me. And we were over at my aunt and uncle's house. And for whatever reason, my brothers and my cousin let me join them, you know, in my cousin's room listening to music because I was much younger than them. I often got, you know, excluded from stuff like that. But they let me hang out with them. And she put these records on and I lost my freaking mind. I mean, to the point where she gave me two records to take home with me. And those two records are Kiss Alive 1 and Rock and Roll Over by Kiss. And at the risk of sounding cliche or overly dramatic, that moment changed my life probably more than just about anything else that's come since, with the exception of marrying my beautiful wife.
Of course,
throw that in there so I don't get my ass kicked later on. Seriously, that set me on a path because it blew my mind. I mean, I loved the music. The songs were so catchy. You know, the image, these like superhero looking dudes with these crazy costumes and this makeup and blood and fire. It was literally life changing for me. And to the point where I got into playing music, I got into performing music. I hung out with degenerate dirtbags like you guys. I probably... So those two records, yeah, they really hold a very, very special place in my heart. I still have them to this day. Those are two that were in the box, that were in the closet. But yeah, literally changed my life when I got those two records.
I got to go back to something we talked about a little earlier. It triggered a memory with Paul here. So when we were talking about playing records backwards, I don't know if you remember, back when Eddie Murphy was on Saturday Night Live, he did this sketch with Joe Piscopo when he was Eddie played a character named Clarence who was the fifth Beatle.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Oh my God. It was so, they were the Clarences before they were the Beatles.
Yeah, they were the Clarences. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so he played the song, I think it was like Love Me Do or something. He played backwards. And you hear John and Paul talking to each other and you hear John go, "Aye, Paul, let's get Clarence out of the band and steal those good ideas." So that's how I always addressed Paul. Like anytime, like, I Paul.
That goes back, I don't even know how many years.
Oh, dude, from like, I think, you know, if it wasn't the night we met at that Saigon Kick Show, it was like soon thereafter. My sister used to do it too. Yeah. I Paul.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God.
All right, Paul, it's time for the Ride the Lightning round.
Okay, I tried to study, but I didn't even know how to go about preparing for this.
No, there's no way to prepare for this. I'm going to hit you with 10 this or that choices, and you just got to make a choice and move on. If you can't stop and think about it and debate it, we can always go back when we're done, but while I'm throwing these at you, we just got to roll, okay?
Just got to swat them down. Boom, boom, boom. All right.
And Paul, this is going to suck because this is the second time Mac has done this. I was the first victim, so I'm going to enjoy this immensely watching you squirm because, yeah, he's going to mess you up, dude.
All right, we'll sit back and watch the show.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Okay, here we go. Ready? Motorhead or the Ramones?
Motorhead.
Green Day or Green Jelly?
Oh, Green Jelly.
Ooh. Judgment Night soundtrack or the Crow soundtrack?
Judgment Night.
Ice Cube or Eazy-E?
Ice Cube.
Paul or Oates?
Oates.
It's the mustache, isn't it?
Yeah.
Type O negative or King Diamond?
Type out.
Oh, that's mean.
Typo.
Vanilla Ice or snow?
Snow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, no, did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Brian Johnson or Bon Scott?
Bon Scott.
Doors or Led Zeppelin?
Doors.
Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
It's a trick question, dickhead. Lemmy is God.
Lemmy is God.
That's why it was so hard. I couldn't figure it out.
Dude. You did much better than I did. You rapid fire answered those questions, man. I struggled. And he actually, you did a couple, you rehashed one or two in there. Because I think you gave me Brian Johnson or Bon Scott.
Did I?
Did you not? I think you did.
I definitely did the Lemmy or God thing, but.
Yeah, you definitely did that.
And I hit you with 20, so I only did 10 with Paul.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. There was definitely an AC/DC one in there. Yeah, maybe it wasn't Brian Johnson.
Some of them were pretty easy.
Oh, it was Angus or Malcolm.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep. Again, which, I mean, it's like choosing your children. How do you pick?
Okay, Paul, is there anything you want to go back and defend or explain?
Yeah.
What was choosing between Lemmy and... Oh, that was the remote. Was it Motorhead and the Ramones?
Yeah.
Oh, Motorhead and Ramones. Yeah.
That's tough. And I shot it out quick because I'm like, I had to be quick. And I'm like, ooh, that hurts. You know, I'm like, because that. I'm like, I don't know.
That's the point,
I'm like,
Paul.
It's like, Sophie's Choice or something. I mean, what do? You know, you just.
That's exactly what I said, dude. I'm like, this is some Sophie's Choice shit,
Sophie's
man.
Choice shit right there. You know, because I'm like,
I tell you, I did not see. The whole Hall or Oates thing, and you went with Oates. I didn't see that coming.
Well, I mean, Hall and Oates is Hall and Oates. I mean, you can't have one without the other. I mean, I don't know.
And he took Snow over Vanilla Ice?
That was interesting. Informa? I mean, what do you
mean? Informa? What the hell was that? Informa?
Is that how to say it up in Canada? I don't know.
Dude. Oh, man.
Oh, that was great.
Oh my God, I've been laughing about that all night, dude. Informa?
I will only say it like that from now on.
We might have created a new ism, you know, one of those things that just lasts for, you know, Informa?
It's right up there with Apple.
Apple.
Informa.
And I knew you were going to take the Doors over Zeppelin because you're a Doors man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And then the King Diamond one was tough. Typos number one.
Oh, dude, I would have struggled with that one, too. I would have struggled with that one, too.
Typo is, like, my favorite, you know, I mean.
I think push comes to shove, I would have went with you on Typo, too. But that wouldn't have been an easy choice for me.
Yeah, but that was a hard one. If it was King Diamond, Merciful Fate.
Oh, King, all day.
You know, because Merciful Fate, too, is.
That was my initial choice that I had down. But I thought, well, that's going to be a little too easy for him, so I'm going to make it harder with my Typo.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
So that's our good friend Paul from Vintage Marché.
Yeah, nice job, man.
Go to VintageMarché727.com or check him out on Instagram at VintageMarché727.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was a real treat. I love talking about this stuff. And, you know, of course, you two guys, we just have such a history. And seeing your faces here and talking, it's been a blast.
Nice, dude. Well, we'll do it again for sure, man. That was a great time.
Yes.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for coming on and being our first guest, man. We appreciate it. Yeah, had some good laughs, man. That was great.
For sure.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thank you.
All right, let's do some shout outs here.
Yeah.
We got some, I want to thank some loyal listeners that I see coming back quite a bit, starting with our friends in Brussels, Belgium.
Nice.
Now, we know it's not just one person. It's not just Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It might be like his extended family at this point.
It might be, friends and family.
Yeah.
Either way, Brussels, thank you. We love you. Now, I am going to butcher the pronunciation of this, so I want to apologize in advance.
It wouldn't be the greatest mixtape podcast if we didn't screw something up, so.
Yes, and here it is. Okay, there's a city region in France that have been coming back and checking out more and more episodes. And if I pronounce it like an American, it's going to be Charenton-le-Pont. But I'm guessing it's Charenton-le-Pont.
That sounded good.
I don't know, but that's what I'm going to go with. Then back here in the States, loyal listeners, Charlotte, Boardman, Ashburn, Virginia, San Jose, Houston, San Francisco, Oklahoma City. Thank you for coming back again and again. We appreciate you.
Hell yeah.
New listeners, Portugal, Amsterdam, Cape Town, South Africa, Kitchener, Ontario. And then back here in the States, Cleveland, St. Louis, Corpus Christi, Seattle, Akron, Ohio, Bozeman, Montana. Thanks for checking us out.
Lots of new friends.
Yes, we love
it.
Hell yeah. Great to see the audience growing. People coming back for more. So that's awesome. And then check us out on our YouTube channel and on Instagram. We're at The Greatest Mixtape Podcast. Email us at thegreatestmixtapepodcast@gmail.com. Please give us some show ideas. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear it.
Send us some love.
Yes.
All right. Well, on that note, that's going to wrap it up for us. Once again, it's The Greatest Mixtape Podcast. I'm Eric.
And I'm Mac.
And we're out of here. Thanks again for being here. Yeah.